to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. 201-939-4513. That's the way you call us and get in on the action. As the Giants coming off their first loss of the season against the Washington Redskins, they begin to look ahead to the Minnesota Vikings. And here to talk about is one of the busiest men in show business, one and only former Super Bowl champion, Giants center Sean O'Hara.
Hi, John. Thanks for having me on, man. I'm rolling up my sleeves right here because we're about to get down and dirty.
No, we are, because I'm sure there will be some unhappy Giant fans out there,
as you might expect.
And a disappointing loss in a big division game. And, you know, you always say the division games count twice as much as the non-division games. And a disappointing loss, Sean, simply because to me there were so many self-inflicted wounds where this was a game where the Giants, if they would have played just a little bit cleaner, could have won.
Yeah, this is one of those films where you know going in on a Monday after that game, you got to rewatch it. And it's, you know, it's like death by a thousand cuts because you just watch, oh, man, look at that play. You know, they had a punt blocked, and that was a huge momentum swing, and then they had a foolish penalty on it. So that play, you know, it was a huge, you know, it basically took points off the board because they were going to get points out of that. They had the ball right there. You know, obviously there was a couple of other penalties offensively. You know, I'm sure Weston Richburg never thought he would ever get ejected from a game. But, you know, those things all of a sudden now are magnified. The Eli interception where he was trying to hit William Ty in the red zone. You know, all those things start to be magnified in this loss. And, you know, you mentioned it. This loss at home to an 0-2 Washington Redskins team who was desperate. And I mean, I don't think desperation could be any clearer than the fake punt call that Jay Gruden made. So, this one, you hope that it doesn't come back to bite you, but now, you know, they've got to go on the road into Minnesota on Monday Night Football after Minnesota just beat Carolina in Carolina. So, this is a really tough challenge. I think there's always some good out of games, and there's certainly a lot of good they can take away from that, but they're definitely disappointed in that loss.
And now they get some bad news this week coming off the game as well. Sean, Shane Vereen, season-ending triceps injury. Rashad Jennings did not play last week because of the thumb injury. He'll obviously have an extra day to recover this week with the game on Monday night, see if he can go. But how does this Shane Vereen injury impact the offense and the running game specifically?
Well, I think Shane did a great job. You know, I saw him right before the game, and he was so fired up. You know, I mean, when the Giants signed him, I think this is what he had in mind. He wanted to be the feature back, and I think for him, he was playing great. You know, he had the fumble, so it was back-to-back weeks for him to have a fumble, and I know he was upset about that. But his impact, you know, he had a couple of explosive runs, and I think a lot of times we saw the Giants flank him out almost like a receiver. He's a total mismatch when you get him out as a receiver because he's a running back. He's either going to get matched up on a linebacker or a safety.
Yeah.
And that's a mismatch because Shane Vereen runs routes like a receiver. So certainly lost. Now with Rashad Jennings being banged up, here's what I think it really does. Now Bobby Rainey becomes a factor. And we saw him. He had a chance to come down with a touchdown, that big throw that Eli threw to him, and he wasn't able to come down with it. But now – Bobby Rainey made this team because of a special teams contribution. But if Rashad Jennings is banged up now, that means Dark was going to be your starter, and Bobby Rainey has to come in now and really be a factor offensively. I like Rainey. I like his ability. I really like Orleans Darkwa. So it's unfortunate for Vereen, but this is a great opportunity for Darkwa, who I think is a very powerful runner. He's very north-south. There is no dance. There is no shake and bake with him. He's coming downhill, and the yards after contact, you know, that's something that's going to wear down a defense.
Do you think Paul Perkins is ready, or do you think he's still too far behind in some of the stuff like pass protection, knowing the playbook and things like that to be a big factor?
Well, this will be a very big tell, you know, as far as what they decide to do with him. Now, the good thing is they've got an extra day here by playing on Monday night. So if indeed they want Paul Perkins to become a factor, you know, I think you've got to let him – you've got to see what he can do. And I think what we saw in preseason with him was he's got a natural ability to just find a seam and find a little running lane. He did a great job at UCLA with it. And I really liked his ability, his vision, and his patience from what I saw in the preseason.
Yeah, I think Pro Football Focus had him as the most elusive running back coming out of college last year. He had forced the most missed tackles in terms of creating opportunities in space, so he certainly has the physical ability. A couple other things with this game, Sean. I went back and I watched, or at least I scrolled through a lot of the Redskins' defensive snaps against the Giants on the All-22. A lot of the Giant fans I know the last couple days have complained that maybe the Giants didn't try to go down the field enough and make big plays. But I didn't even look through all the plays. I just looked at how the Redskins were lined up at the start of each play. Yeah. They had two safeties deep on nearly every single defensive snap of that game, and they were not going to let the Giants beat them down the field.
Yeah, they did it two ways. You mentioned the safeties, and I think that's one of the things that why Eli didn't go to Odell very much in the first half. Now, granted, D'Angelo Hall goes down, and they bring in Will Blackman, former Giant, and Breshad Breeland going down. Now, that forced them to be a little thin, but I thought even the corners, they were playing a lot of bailout coverage. It wasn't a lot of, hey, press. Josh Norman knew, I can't press Odell one-on-one. He's going to beat me deep. So they weren't doing that a lot, and there was a lot of bailout coverage. So, you know, for the Giants, that's why you saw a lot of intermediate passing.
Yeah.
You know, you didn't even see as many slants. One of the things that jumped out at me was how fast the linebackers were flying out of their little flat area to try to take away the slants to both Odell and Sterling Shepard and Victor Cruz. So I think that was clearly what Washington was trying to do. And it clearly frustrated Odell because I think he felt like he could have been a bigger factor early on. But I think that's also why the Giants were able to run the football so well, because the Giants were in three wides. And coming into this game, the Giants have been in three – they're 11 personnel, which is one running back, one tight end, three wide receivers. They've been in that personnel more than any team in the NFL.
Almost 95% of the plays this year.
And that, to me, really is what put Washington into their nickel coverage.
Mm-hmm.
And then they even went dime when they bring Sua Cravens down as their dime linebacker. So when you see that as an offense, run the ball.
And that's why they did. And that's why, Sean, in the first half, you took the words right out of my mouth, just in a half of football, 17 carries, 95 yards, 5.5 yards per carry in the first half. So the Giants certainly were challenged by the Redskins to run the ball, and they're able to do it in half number one. Real quick before we continue on here, our first poll question up on the Giants app. If you're watching or listening on the Giants app, you can place your vote. Which NFC North matchup is tougher? Of course, the Giants playing two NFC North matchups in a row on the road. The Vikings or the Packers? Both tough venues. Both primetime games, so place your vote. And we'll, of course, look ahead to the Vikings a little bit later on in the show. And then now, Sean, the defense, very quickly, before we get to your calls, we see you lining up. We'll get to your tweets as well at hashtag Giants Chat. Now the defense is really banged up.
Yeah.
And, you know, we saw the big difference the first 2 weeks, and especially against the Saints. We talked about it, where one of the reasons the Giants were able to do to Drew Brees what they did, they were able to man up in the secondary, and they didn't give those receivers any space to open up. Well, easy to do that when you're running out Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie, Janoris Jenkins, and Eli Apple, and you got Darian Thompson at safety. Now, all of a sudden, Thompson didn't play. In the first half, you lose DRC. In the first half, you lose Eli Apple. And then you're running out your second and third string guys. And all of a sudden, Steve Spagnuolo can't exactly scheme the defense the way he normally would.
Yeah, it definitely changes the way you call your blitzes, too, because Spags – I mean, look, coming into that game, Leon Hall and Landon Collins had the only two sacks on the defense. It wasn't a D lineman. So he loves to bring his safeties and bring corners. He loves bringing the weak corner blitz into the boundary. That's one of his staples. So now, absolutely, if you have your third corner in, maybe you don't call that blitz. Maybe you don't call that pressure because you don't want to put Trevin Wade on that. And I think, you know, coming into this game and even all season, Ben McAdoo has been very adamant about the fact that we have three starting corners.
Mm-hmm.
When they ask, why is Eli Apple starting, not starting? Why is DRC being moved in a slot? And his answer is, we have three starting corners. Well, now you're down to one, and so now Trevin Wade's got to step up. You know, it's to me, what really has to happen now with a banged-up secondary, banged-up corner, now your D-line has to get home. And we saw JPP finally get home. He got his first sack of the season. We saw Olivier Vernon get his first sack of the season. Those two guys have really got to step it up. And Olivier Vernon, you know, I think one of the things that jumps out at me watching the film is for 3 weeks now, he's gone against three really good left tackles, and he's playing with an injured wrist. So I think if he can find a way to battle through this wrist injury, I think his impact is going to grow, because week one he went against Tyron Smith, who's probably the best left tackle in the game. Week two was Teron Armstead. He's a young, athletic left tackle, but he's climbing up the ranks as far as an elite left tackle. And then Trent Williams, who Pro Football Focus has graded out as the best pass-blocking left tackle in the NFL right now. So
really? Wow.
Those are three big challenges for Olivier Vernon. He got his first sack, so sometimes they come in clusters and bunches. But for him, going against Minnesota, Matt Khalil was placed on IR with a hip injury.
Mm-hmm.
So now TJ Clemmings is starting at left tackle. He started 16 games at right tackle, but he really didn't play left tackle in college.
He was in Pitt. He was at Pittsburgh,
he
right?
Was
T.J.
Pitt,
Clemens,
you know,
right?
Was Pitt. Mm-hmm. He was actually a defensive lineman, and then they moved him to offensive line. He's from Teaneck, actually, a New Jersey guy.
Oh, really?
But a very athletic guy. So this,
and he was projected to eventually be a left tackle, but yeah, they just weren't ready to move him there until Khalil got hurt.
Right, and last year he played right tackle because Philip Lotholt tore his Achilles, so he was thrust into action with that. So that'll be a good matchup for defense, but they've got to do a better job with that, like you said, because now you're banged up at the corner position and with Darian Thompson not playing. I will say this. I thought Nat Burhe, what he did in the run game was phenomenal. He brought the hammer. I mean, he knocked Matt Jones out of the game. He came back in the game, but he was running downhill, and he was on a mission to just blow up the running back.
He better be careful lowering that helmet, though.
Yeah.
That might turn into a flag one of these weeks.
You know, the thing that was good was he made sure he came with the shoulder. And the one thing is, too, with a running back, it's different because they're not a defenseless receiver.
The rules
receiver,
are different, so, absolutely.
Yeah.
201-939-4513. All right, let's get to your calls. I'll monitor hashtag Giants chat as well. Jerome is down in Charlotte. He'll lead us off on Big Blue Kickoff Live today. Jerome, how are you, pal?
I'm fine. How are you guys doing? I watched the game. I was so upset. But I saw the Chargers release Andre Williams, and I was wondering with the injuries we have, Jenkins, you know, may not play again this week. Is there a possibility of him, of the Giants signing him back, knowing that he knows the system and can come back in?
Well, before I pass this on to Sean, Jerome, let me just state first that neither Sean nor I know if they are, in fact, going to bring him in or talk to him or anything like that. But in a theoretical world, whether or not it fits and a need, if Jennings can't go and you can bring in a guy that knows your system, knows your offense, and you know can carry the load, it seems to be a situation that could make sense if they want to go in that direction.
Yeah, I understand how seamless that could be. I think the challenge with that is it comes down to Rashad Jennings. If Rashad Jennings, if he can't even dress, now are you forced in with just two running backs? I don't think you want to do
right.
You want to go in with just Perkins and with just Rainey. So that's a challenge. But so yeah, I think that's a great option to be able to bring in Andre Williams. But I would say this, if they did sign Andre Williams, I think he would be an emergency situation because I think you're going to give Arlene Darkwa, he's going to start.
Mm-hmm.
If they bring in Paul Perkins, who, you know, if they activate him on game day, now he's going to do a lot of special teams. That's one of the things that Andre Williams doesn't do. He doesn't do special teams very well, even when he does try. Bobby Rainey has a lot of special teams qualities, and so does Arlene Darkwa. Orleans Darkwa, I think, might have led the team in special team tackles in the preseason. So,
well, now you got to worry, too.
Contributor.
If you start Darkwa, can you still use him on special teams if he's getting all those snaps on offense?
Yeah, you don't want to. That's why Rainey's got to step up.
Right.
And then if you dress somebody else, which Paul Perkins, I think, can do some of the special teams. But thanks, Jerome, for the call. And just
want
to say, hope you guys are doing okay in Charlotte. We're all thinking about
Excellent
you.
Excellent point.
I know there was last week was a tough week for everybody down in Charlotte and certainly for the Carolina Panthers. I know they're really trying hard to help out in the community and create some positive vibes down there. So we're thinking of you all.
Yeah, thanks, Jerome. Appreciate the call. And again, hope you guys all stay safe down there with everything happening down there in Charlotte. Let's go to Ken in Trenton. He's up next on line two on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Ken, how are you today?
Good. How's it going, fellas?
Doing well, Ken.
I had a question about DRC and Eli Apple and whether or not one or both of them will be in or out this week.
I would say too early to tell, Ken. I mean, at this point, I mean, the injury is still calming down. They haven't even come in here really to work out. Those guys are getting treatment. But that's something you worry about when they release their first injury report and you see them get on the practice field on this week on Thursday since it's a Monday night game. So until we get to Thursday, we're really not going to have much of a feel for whether or not those guys are going to be able to play next week.
Yeah, Ken, the only thing I'll just throw out there on there, the good news is they get an extra day rest playing on Monday night. That helps. For DRC, I think it's a quad. And from what I gathered, I thought it might be like a bruise, so that might be good, a good thing, but I'm speculating here. The thing that worries me more is the Eli Apple injury, because now anytime you talk about hamstring with a corner, to me that gets me worried, and I think he got hurt actually on the long return by Jameson Crowder.
It was on the kickoff, right? A punt, rather.
He ran down there to make the tackle, and that's when the hamstring was injured. So, when it comes to corners, anything that's lower extremity, I'm always concerned. A shoulder they could play through because they don't really hit all the time anyways. But a hamstring, that could be problematic.
Yeah. Another thing is I really want to see what Paul Perkins can do. I hope he gets at least gets a chance this week. But I want to see what Orling Darkwa can do with a whole game. I want to see what it's like to hand the ball off to him like we do with Rashad Jennings and really let him pound the football. In my opinion, I think that he hits the hole better than any other running back on this team. I mean, my opinion is, you know, take it with a grain of salt. I never played football. I weigh 150 pounds soaking wet. But from what I can see watching the games, it looks like he hits the holes properly. Shoulders square. He always falls forward. I really want to see what he could do with a whole game. It could be a blessing in disguise, even though, you know, I love Shane Vereen, but it could work out in our favor.
All right, Ken, appreciate the call. Sean, what have you seen from Darkwa so far when he's gotten the opportunity? Like Ken said accurately, he hasn't really had a chance to carry the load for an entire game. We saw it do it for a half here or there during the preseason. You mentioned downhill runner, powerful guy. Do you think he's a guy that can handle 17 to 20 carries in a game?
Yeah, I think he can absolutely handle it. I think, you know, what Ken hit on, you know, you don't have to play football in the NFL for 11 years to see that. Orleans Darkwa, he means business. And I think a couple things jump out at you when you watch Orleans run. He runs angry. He runs hard. And he gets what I call dirty yards. You know, he's always falling forward. Well, those 2 yards add up. You know, you mentioned if you get 15 carries and you fell forward and got 2 yards every time, that's 30 extra yards right there. So those dirty yards are something that Orleans Darkwa does a great job of. The other thing that jumps out at you whenever you watch film with Darkwa is there are not a lot of negative runs.
No.
He gets the ball and he makes one decision, makes one cut, and he goes. And so that right there, you're not going to be in second and 12 or, you know, second and 13 because you're not getting the negative run. So that's big. I think he's a good blocker too. And I think that's one of the keys. You know, you see around the NFL, the running back by committee, you get the first down, second down running back, and then you bring in a third down guy. I think Darkwa can handle all that. And so I think that's a feather in the cap because we've seen the Giants do a lot of no huddle, a lot of up-tempo stuff. So he's a guy you can leave out there. You don't have to worry about substituting out. And I think he is one of those guys that gets better as the game goes along. I, as an offensive lineman, I loved carries 15 through 22. Because a lot of times, carry 1 through 10, you're just kind of setting up the defense. Here's what we're going to do. We're running zone, zone, zone. And then you hit it with scissors, and you set up the scissors for the big play. And that's the misdirection play. And I could see this offense doing that a lot with Orleans Darkwa, and I think he's one of those guys, just like Jennings, that once you see him in the 16-plus carries, he gets better and he gets stronger.
Here's a larger concept question for you, then I'm going to go to a tweet that we got here about Odell Beckham Jr. People talk about the offensive line wearing down a defensive line in the running game, and in the fourth quarter they're tired, and you can run the ball more. What doesn't make sense to me, and I'm sure there's a reason for it, I'd love for you to explain it. These defensive linemen get rotated in and out of the game the whole game. They're playing out of, let's say, the 75 snaps. They're playing 40 to 50. You guys are in there to 74 to 75 plays. You're not rotating out of the game. Why are the offensive linemen fresher than the defensive linemen when they're playing 20 more snaps?
It's a great question, John. The only thing I can come up with is we're tougher. O-linemen are built tough. We're just different breeds. You know what? I think there's a couple things. I think it's probably more exhausting being a defensive player.
Because you got to chase more.
You have to chase. You've got to run. You've got to run after the football. That I think is exhausting. You know, as offensive linemen, we're also kind of built for that. We got a little more girth, a little more stamina. You know, I mean, you train for that too. So I think for defensive linemen, they want you to go 100 miles an hour and less reps. That way, they feel like they're getting maximum output. But it is something that always frustrates you as an old lineman. There's nothing worse than on a 12-play drive, you get to play 8 and then come a fresh, you know, fresh legs, fresh bodies. And you're like, dude, this is the 9th play of the drive. Like, I'm out of gas. I need some Gatorade. And I got a new guy that's just been standing on the sidelines with, you know, he's all full of energy. He just had a Mountain Dew on the sideline and he's coming at me like a spider monkey. So you got to deal with that. But I used to love when we had Brandon Jacobs because everybody in the first quarter wanted to try him. They wanted to tackle him. Safeties, corners, linebackers, even D linemen, they wanted to try. By the fourth quarter, nobody wanted to tackle him. I mean, they were like pushing each other. Yeah, you get him. You go get him. I don't want to tackle him. Nobody wanted to get in front. Nobody wanted to be the bug on the windshield. And that's what you try to do with a run game. You realize some of those big runs may not come until the third and fourth quarter. the game's got to be able to dictate that. You've got to be able to be patient with that. And certainly your offense has got to be willing to play call like that.
I got a few questions about Odell on Twitter, one from Big Blue Viator, another one from our buddy James Tipper, and some other people as well. This week against Norman, there was no drama on the field with Odell Beckham Jr. On the field, between the lines, he got a lot of yards. He got a lot of receptions. Led all players in yards from scrimmage. Led all players in receptions. And besides that one, you know, drop towards the end of the game, he played a very good game on the field. But on TV, they show what he's doing on the sideline. He was emotional. He got a little upset. As a player that's involved in the game, do you even notice that stuff on the sideline going on? Do you care that's going on? Is there an effect on the team? Should they talk to him about it? From a player perspective, how do you view that?
Yeah, I can recall a number of times where teammates were and I call them wide divas. You know, they're over there doing their diva stuff, and it's drama, and it's nonsense.
But do you care?
We don't have time for that. You know what? I care when you start affecting other guys. Like, if you're over there doing your thing and you know, you're frustrated, you want to throw your helmet or whatever, to me, I don't like it. It's a bad look, but – you know, it's – I don't want – don't distract Eli now. You know, and Eli's got enough on his plate. You know, he doesn't need to come over there and deal with the young and the restless and Days of Our Lives and all that drama. But for a guy like Odell Beckham, I think he has shown great strides. I mean, he's still a young kid.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people don't realize how young he is and how young a lot of these players are. And we want them to act like 30 and 35-year-old men, which when we were their age, we all did dumb stuff and we all acted inappropriately at times. I think Odell showed maturity for his behavior on the field. I think he still has, you know, he still has the emotions, and he still is a very emotional player. And so I think you're always going to have some of that. Now,
and here's the thing, though. I think he was emotional because he wanted to win. I think he was annoyed because the team was losing. Yeah. I don't think he was annoyed and yelling at Eli because he wasn't having the ball thrown at him.
Right.
I think he was mad because he wanted to win. And to me, that's a very different situation than him trying to get in the quarterback's head, throw me the ball, throw me the ball. If you're mad because the team's losing, I get it.
Yeah, it wasn't demonstrative towards Eli.
No,
like, throwing my hands up. He wasn't showing anybody up. So I'm with you on that. I think it does come from his desire to win, his desire to be great. And I think you've got to find a way to channel that and make it good.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you want players that you know, their give a hoot meter's not broken.
His meter's not broken.
That with him, no.
Absolutely not.
But I will say this, John. I was so impressed with how well he started to take over the game. I felt like that hit on Sterling Shepard, when Josh Norman hit him, that kind of fired everybody up. And now you could see Odell crank it up a little bit. And now all of a sudden, I'm sure he was in a huddle saying, let's go. It's time. All right, I'm with you. Mm-hmm. If it's going to be on us, we got to give me the ball and let me do it. And, I mean, he got free in a phone booth on that one play. I mean, it looked like Josh Norman had him wrapped up. And he spent stiff arms,
great spin moves,
and is up the sideline. You know, I think that's really what Odell wants to do and how he knows he can contribute. And that's against one of the best corners. So there's plenty of more good things to come from Odell.
And our next poll question is Odell Beckham related. Believe it or not, through three games, Odell Beckham Jr. is still without a touchdown reception. It ties the longest streak of his career, going back to weeks 9, 10, and 11, or 8, 9, and 10 of his rookie year, something like that. I don't think he's ever gone four straight weeks without a touchdown. So we'll Odell Beckham get his first touchdown of the season on Monday night against the Vikings. Go to the Giants mobile app, place your vote, and we'll have the results for you. We have the results of the first poll. Which NFC North matchup is tougher? 54% Sean say the Vikings, 46% say the Packers. What do you think is the tougher road matchup for the Giants?
That's interesting, and I look at it like the Vikings defense is probably why people are saying that, because I don't think anybody is really overly concerned about Sam Bradford. They don't have Adrian Peterson, so that
offense
is going to look
line.
Different. The O-line has had some guys get hurt. I think Alex Boone was carted off as well. So, you know, offensively, I really don't – I don't know that that's – I think the Giants would be a favorite from a defensive standpoint against that offense. So I think if 54% of the people are saying the Vikings are a tougher matchup, it's because of that defense. And for them to go down to Carolina and do what they did – I think that front is phenomenal. It's a familiar foe for some of these guys. Linval Joseph is one of the strongest defensive tackles in the NFL. I think their linebackers, Anthony Barr, He's playing phenomenal. You know, they've got some really good corners. Harrison Smith is all over the field. He's their safety, that, you know, the big play safety.
Their D.N. Griffin had 3 sacks against Cam Newton last week.
Yeah, Everson Griffin, yeah. And Brian Robeson.
Correct.
They're two mm-hmm. good pass rushers. You know, I think it's a very stout. You know, Minnesota has become a really tough team. They don't beat themselves, and they're not going to lose a lot of football games. And this team, you know, frankly, if you look back to last year, they won a playoff game. Blair Walsh misses a field goal, but for all intents and purposes, they had Seattle beat.
Yes, they did.
At home in that game. So that tells you how stout that defense is. And I think it's a great challenge. Trey Wayne's one of the young corners. You know, he's playing some good football. I think offensively, the big challenge for the Giants now is going to be Stephon Diggs, because he's lighting the NFL up. First 2 games of the season, he had 100 plus yards receiving. Only 2 other Vikings receivers had done that in the history of the Minnesota Vikings.
Wow.
They've had some good receivers.
No, yeah, they have.
Chris Carter.
Go Anthony Carter back in the day too.
Yeah, yeah. So he tied Chris Carter and Gene Washington for the only 2 receivers to start an NFL season with back-to-back 100-yard games. So Stephon Diggs will be a tough matchup. So briefly to go on to Green Bay, I think Green Bay is actually a tougher matchup, because I think Aaron Rodgers, this is when he's dangerous, when everybody starts questioning him. And he's got to come out and go R-E-L-A-X on everybody. This is when you don't want to play Aaron Rodgers.
Who did and the Packers coming off a bye, too, by the way. They have a bye this week.
Right.
So they'll be well-rested. The Giants have a short week off on Monday night game. That doesn't help either.
Yeah, and Clay Matthews, he was inactive this past Sunday, so he'll be back. And I think Clay Matthews and Julius Peppers, you know, Julius Peppers is the active sack leader right now in the NFL. So he knows how to get after the quarterback. They moved Clay Matthews back to his outside linebacker position, as opposed to last year when they moved him inside. And Mike Daniels is a nightmare inside. So I think the Green Bay Packers actually might be a tougher matchup than Minnesota because of that front. And because Aaron Rodgers, you know he's going to find a way to score points. He had 4 touchdowns against Detroit. Only 200 yards, but still 4 touchdowns, and Eddie Lacy had over 100 yards. So that offense is much better, in my mind, than Minnesota.
Remember, Minnesota played Green Bay, and they did very well against the passing attack of the Packers. And obviously the Packer and the Giants schemes, very similar. They both come from the same school. Exactly.
Yeah.
So the Vikings will be ready, and they're very used to dealing with the type of offense that the Giants will roll out on the field on Monday night. Different personnel, of course, obviously, but the scheme will at least be the same. Let's go to Nick in New Jersey. He's up next on Giants.com. He wants to talk about the Vikings matchup. Nick, what's going on?
Hey, guys. How you doing today?
Hi, Nick.
A little frustrated over Sunday's game. I think we were a better team, and honestly, I don't think Washington beat us. I think we beat ourselves.
I think that's
with
fair.
All the penalties, all the turnovers. 2 things I don't understand is, one, why would you try to run the ball when it was 2nd and 22 instead of going for, like, a short 10-yard pass to gain some yards?
When was that? I'm not...
That was in the first half after the...
So I can bring that up here.
Flowers holding penalty.
See if I can find that play in the situation specific. But I have seen a lot of complaints on Twitter the last couple days, Sean, from Giant fans. So until I find this play, why don't you just speak generally about 2nd and long, the theory behind the draw play or the screen pass, why that can be an effective play in those types of situations.
Yeah, 2nd and 22, you don't really draw plays up for that down and distance. You hope you're never in that situation. But the one thing you don't want to do is – you don't want to call a 7-step drop and try to say, all right, we've got to throw the ball out down the field, try to get a first down. You don't want to try to put your quarterback at a bad position because you're trying to throw the ball 23 yards down the field to get the first down. So on 2nd and 22, the mindset is always, let's get half back. So if we can get 10 yards or get 11 yards and now get it to 3rd and 10, it's a little more manageable. But you also want to do it in a conservative kind of way. You don't want to be too aggressive, and especially coming off of a penalty. So the draw play – number one, a lot of defenses will be in some sort of a prevent defense on 2nd and 22, which means the linebackers will be a lot deeper. So now a draw play, you give your running back a little more time to create a one-on-one mismatch or a broken tackle, if that is the case. And a lot of times on 2nd and 22, defensive linemen, they do a lot more twist games because now all of a sudden they know you're in a passing situation. They try to create lanes. Well, sometimes those twists can open up big running lanes, and that's why you would do a draw or a screen or a simple run play just to try to get some positive yards, without really risking a big throw.
And this is the specific situation, Sean. It was first and 10 on Washington's 47. That's when Eli Manning got absolutely blasted by Baker.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, boy, they're lucky that they didn't lose Eli on that play.
That was as hard as I've ever seen him hit on an individual play. So yeah. That happened on that play. Then
it was a fumble.
Correct. The Giants
recovered
it. Correct. Then the second and 22, they ran a draw play to Darker over the middle. And I remember looking at this play actually this morning. I believe on that play, Bobby Hart was on at right tackle. He was supposed to chip Kerrigan before going out to the linebacker. He did it, and Pugh pulling around could not get to Kerrigan in time before he tackled Darkwa for a two-yard loss to make it third and 24. And then on third and 24, the Giants ran it for six and punted the football away.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, basically one of those situations where you say, all right, we've had a couple bad plays. And then also you got to keep in mind, when your quarterback gets drilled like that,
I was gonna say, is that
come back in a huddle? It's like, okay, look, my quarterback gets drilled. He might have the wind knocked out of him or whatever. I'm just gonna call a draw play, let him get his wits about him, and you know, maybe catch his breath. So, I'm sure that played a factor into it. But when you said it's third and 24.
Yeah.
You know, there is no good play call there, and I think the best situation you do right there is, look, I'm gonna call a safe play because a punt right now is our best option. We don't want a turnover. You know, we don't want another sack, forced fumble. We don't want another penalty that moves us back even further. So you almost have to kind of play long-term with your decision-making at that point.
Thank you for the call, Nick. We appreciate it. 201-939-4513. I don't have the Twitter handle, but I saw this question come in yesterday. How do you think Bobby Hart did against Ryan Kerrigan in the game?
Yeah, it's a good question, and I'm glad we're getting to it. I actually thought he played well. And he played a lot better than I thought he played when they asked him to move into left guard in the preseason.
Okay.
I didn't think he looked good at guard. Certainly it was against the Jets, and they have a tendency to make a lot of people look bad. But I thought he looked a little out of place at guard. I thought he struggled with some of the power. But to me, he looked a lot more comfortable at right tackle. I thought his pass protection was very good. In the fourth quarter, it started to – you could tell that Trent Murphy and Ryan Kerrigan started to time up his punch a little bit, and they got on the edge a little more. So I think there's definitely a lot of room for improvement for him. The Giants ran the football a lot to the left, so it made him he was on the backside of a lot of run plays, so I think that helped him out. But I think Bobby Hart, they have to be very pleased with how he played. Granted, Ryan Kerrigan, you know, he's not an all-world rusher. I think he's a decent – you know, very high motor guy. Trent Murphy coming into the game, though, he had 1.5 sacks the week before, and he's really done a good job with his pass rush.
Stanford kid, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I thought Bobby Hart played well.
201-939-4513. Jason's in New Jersey. He wants to talk about the Redskin game. Jason, how's it going? You're on line three. How you doing, Jason?
Good. Just Sean O'Hara, just one play in the Redskins game is really bugging me, and you guys were just talking about the Chris Baker sack play. Now, on face value, it looks like that was on John Jerry. But if I've seen the replay many times, it looked like that was on Richburg because John Jerry looked like he was passing him over, and Richburg was supposed to slide to the right and pick him up. And then if you watch Richburg's reaction after the play, he slapped his helmet with both hands, like, "Oh man, I just made a mistake." If you watch that play, who was that on? Was that on Richburg or was that on John Jerry?
Yeah, it's a great question. I went back and watched that play as well.
I watched it today, too.
They both left. You know, it was kind of like, you got him. Nobody's got him. And I'm with you. I think in that point, I would have to say it's on Richburg. You know, as much as I'd like to stick up for him, I think he had a bad game, so let's pile on.
Center-on-center violence here, man.
He got
Come
ejected.
On.
He got two very strange penalties. I think it's very uncharacteristic of Richburg. But I think – here's why I would say it was probably Richburg's fault, because you have Bobby Hart starting at right tackle, and I think any chance you get, you say as an O-line, "Hey, look, man, hey, if the linebacker drops, we're going to peek out to try to help Bobby Hart because we know, you know, he's got a tough task and he's kind of, you know, he's thrust into the action." So from what it looked like, John Jerry was posting with his left hand Chris Baker, and he kind of peeked out to the right and then he kind of slid out. It looked like he was expecting Richburg to be there. And, of course, Richburg, as you mentioned very astutely, Richburg went over to help out Justin Pugh. So I think that, in my mind, both of them got minuses because the guy that they should have been blocked, Baker should have been the one guy that didn't get to Eli because he basically should have been double teamed. There should have been four hands on him. Instead,
he got a running start.
And that's one guy you do not want landing on your quarterback. Because Chris Baker, he's every bit of 340, 350.
Is Eli made of elastic or rubber or something? It seems like no matter what you do to this guy,
yeah.
I mean, he just keeps getting up.
Yeah, let's not talk about the streak because we don't need to go there. But
and thanks for the call, Jason. Appreciate it, buddy.
Yeah, the good news about Eli is he doesn't have a lot of muscle, so you don't have to worry about him. You know, he is very pliable.
See, I just opened the door for you there.
That
man.
Was easy.
I just lobbed it up
that
for
was
you.
A slam dunk.
201-939-4513. Chris in Virginia, he's up next. Chris, what's happening, pal?
Hey, so I just want to talk about, you know, I mean, that was a big loss for us. I look at it as, you know, a divisional. But as, you know, that we lost to ourselves. Like, you know, a lot of people were saying the Redskins didn't beat us. But what are you doing in practice to prepare for two potentially big games coming up? Do you do anything different, or is practice the same day in and day out?
Well, sometimes I think a loss like this can be good for a team. And, you know, maybe it's just being optimistic, but – I think if the Giants had won that game, now 3-0, you know, I think going into Minnesota and, you know, even Green Bay, like these were going to be big matchups. But I think it makes this team a little bit hungrier as they come into this week. And now they've got a national spotlight game. They've got a chance to really go out. And I think the motivation is there. Number one, you just suffered your first loss of the season. But now you're going to go play an undefeated team in the Minnesota Vikings. So there's a little bit more vinegar in this drink now for this week. So, you know, the fact that you get an extra day, I think they're gonna be geeked up and ready to go for practice. That won't be an issue motivating. But I do think that whenever you have a chance, I mean, they had a chance to basically bury the Washington Redskins at 0-3. That's a totally different ballgame. Now, the Washington Redskins at 0-2, I mean, they were fighting and clawing for their life this season, because 0-3 is drastically different than 1-2.
Like a 3-5% chance of making the playoffs.
And when you look around at the NFC East too, Philly won, Dallas won. So it was a great chance to really kind of create even more room in the NFC and really take control, which is something that this team struggled with. Last year, they were in first place as well, and they kind of, you know, just kind of let it fall through their hands. And especially given that Washington won the division last year, it was a great opportunity to kind of really step on somebody, and I thought they missed out on that. So they should be pretty eager and angry to get back to practice.
Thanks for the call, Chris. We appreciate it, buddy. 201-939-4513. And the least surprising result of a poll in the history of Giants.com, 89% of respondents think Odell Beckham Jr. will get a touchdown on Monday night against the Vikings.
Yeah, they just want to see him dance. You know, they know that he's got some dance moves that he's just waiting to pull out. You know, I think this was to be expected, though, because – with the season that Odell Beckham has had 2 years in a row now, to me that's a sign of respect. You know, they're going to say, hey, look, we're not going to let you beat us with Odell. And now here comes the tough medicine for Odell. He also dropped a touchdown in week one. You know, the Giants, when they went for it, against New Orleans in week two, they went for it. And the incomplete pass to Odell in the end zone, he could have caught that.
The one across the middle, right? When they reached in late?
Yeah. It was right after the incomplete to Larry Donnell in the end zone. So he could have had a chance there.
And then he dropped the deep pass when they were trying to put the game away at the end too, where he could have caught and ran in for the end zone.
Yeah. So, you know, he could have had a couple of touchdowns. But I'll say this. I think Odell Beckham would trade touchdowns in for wins any day.
Any day. And by the way, the reason Beckham maybe isn't having those big explosive plays is all the attention. What does that mean? Guys like Sterling Shepard get man-on-man coverage, and that's how you get a rookie wide receiver who's catching 16 passes on just 19 targets, which is a ridiculous efficiency number, especially for a rookie, for 233 yards and two touchdowns in just his first three ever games. You get him one-on-one in the slot, Sean, without help, he's impossible to cover.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that really jumps out at you, and when I saw him for the first time in training camp, I looked at him, I said, he doesn't look like a rookie. You know, physically, he doesn't look like a rookie. His route running, his attention to detail, he looks far beyond his years.
Yeah.
Mentally, he's not a rookie. So I think we're seeing all of that. We're seeing the fruits of all his labor. But to me, the kid is tough. And I tell you, that hit that he took from Josh Norman just showed it. I mean, he bounced right up, he flexed, you know, said, hey, look, you know, let's go. Like, you can't hurt me. And he's got a little Steve Smith in him, and I like that.
He plays bigger than his height and his weight. There's no question about it. Also, Victor Cruz has made some big plays down the field, too, in man-on-man. The big play end of the Saints game that put him into chip shot field goal range. And then, of course, he had the deep pass where he later fumbled a couple weeks ago, but that was another big play down the field. And he also had a huge, actually two third and long conversions in the game against the Redskins, one in the first half where he kind of sat down in the middle of his zone, which was a great anticipatory pass by Eli. And then he had the big third and 13 on the Giants' final drive before the Sue Cravens pick. So Cruz is finding opportunities, too, with a lot of the attention going to Beckham.
Yeah, and I think he'll continue to get a lot of opportunities because now people are aware of Sterling Shepard. So it's all right, we've got Odell, we've got Sterling Shepard, and now all of a sudden they can't forget about the Salsa King. And I also think for Victor, too, his confidence has been building throughout. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, this is still – he's still getting his game legs under him and building that confidence. So I think with Victor, too – I think they could start designing some plays for him as well because he is very dangerous in the slot. And I wouldn't be surprised if you see Victor, you know, on some gadget plays too, you know, hit both him and Sterling. But Victor has a really good knack for finding space. We saw it in the touchdown throw you mentioned down in Dallas. He was supposed to sit down in that coverage, and he just kind of felt all the traffic, and he just kind of, you know, kept running and drifted in the middle of the field. So he's got a knack, and he's got a great rapport with Eli. You know, I think I read a stat that he, over a three-year span, he had more 60-plus yard touchdowns than any receiver in the NFL during that
three-year
span before he got hurt. So he's certainly capable of the big play.
All right, 201-939-4513. But before we get to our next caller, next and final poll question, more important defensive focus versus the Vikings, stopping the run or stopping the pass? Place your vote on the Giants mobile app if you're watching or listening on that. Now, Sean, before we go to our next caller, I need to warn you about our next caller.
Okay.
He fashions himself a bit of an offensive line expert, so I guarantee he's going to talk about the offensive line.
Okay.
He's one of our favorite callers. He's a lot of fun.
Cool.
Him and Howard Cross battle on a weekly basis.
I love him already.
They're frenemies.
Yeah.
So here he is, Charlie, in Portland, Maine. Charlie, you have an offensive lineman here, and now you don't have to yell at me. You can yell at him. Go ahead.
Top of the morning to you, Sean.
Oh, I love it. Top of the morning to you.
Hey, I do have a question. How come? I mean, it looks like Brent Jones snaps lollipops up to Eli. His snaps are slow, and they kind of just loop over. It almost like takes half a second off what Eli can do. Did you notice that? They're not crisp. They don't come right to him. What is that about?
Yeah, I didn't notice that. I actually thought his snaps were pretty good, you know, especially when you factor that he came in for Richburg, you know, on the ejection, and you really, you know, you're kind of just thrust in there. You know, Brett's been playing center for a while, so he knows how to get the ball back there. I think one of the things that people sometimes question, I used to throw softballs back there to Eli too because he doesn't have great hands. He's really good at throwing the ball. He's not great at catching. So the fastball is overrated when it comes to the shotgun snap. And I think, too, as a center, you can have – you know, you've got a little room for error if you don't give the fastball. Because if you give – if it's a fastball and it's off a little bit, now all of a sudden it's going by you. And we've seen that time and time again in the NFL. If you're a little bit off with the snap as far as accuracy – where you put it, and it's a little bit softer, there's time to react, and it makes it an easier catch for the quarterback.
Charlie, I cannot believe your first question for Sean O'Hara, after you called up 8 times last week asking about Will Beatty, was not about Will Beatty.
I'm getting there.
All right, get there.
I'm getting there. Okay, I have a couple of things. For one thing, you know, you were a center. You're the conscience, and you're the, you know, the controller of the line and the offense. How can Richburg –
kissing your butt now
– get – off and get thrown out of the game for taunting? How can he get so emotional, lose his composure, and do that? I don't understand that. And the second thing is, we didn't run one running play after he got ejected. So what does that say about Jones? And we never ran once to the right side of our line where Hart was. To me, if you don't trust these two linemen that they can run block and be in the game and run block, why are they on the team? I just don't get that. And to me, Will Beatty, being a veteran, should be in the game. He should be the one playing, he's not a rookie, but someone who doesn't have the experience that a Will Beatty does.
All right, Sean, go ahead.
Yeah, you're hitting us with a lot there. And I will say this. I'm pretty sure they ran the ball after Richburg came out of the game because Brett Jones.
No, they didn't.
Let me see if
I can find it.
They had to run the ball because I think it was in the third quarter, fourth quarter. So I know they probably had a couple runs. To your question about running to the left, I think one of the things that the Giants have really found is that Justin Pugh and Eric Flowers are doing a really good job with their double teams at the point of attack. So pulling John Jerry, is a little bit new because last year it was more Justin Pugh pulling. I think Justin Pugh is the more athletic guard, but they've really gotten pretty good combo blocks at the point of attack with Flowers and with Pugh, and it was successful against Dallas. So I think they're just really kind of going with what works. Bobby Hart coming in there at right tackle, I think Bobby's adequate in the run game. So I don't think they were saying, hey, we can't run the football behind them. I think it's just kind of formationally, it's the way things have worked out that they're running to the left. A lot of times you run to the left or right based on where the ball is on the hash marks. So that's a factor. And I think for Richburg, very uncharacteristic of him to have penalties. Certainly the unsportsmanlike conduct penalties. I still didn't see what happened on the first play where he got called for holding and unsportsmanlike conduct.
I didn't see it either.
I have no idea what happened on that, and I haven't had a chance to ask him either. But that penalty
was
interesting.
Again. I think
I think the second one to me was a bogus call, and it was on the big run by Odell.
Now, they didn't call it on the block, right? I think they called it on
They said because he went over there and he was yeah. And to me, that's a chicken call.
They probably thought that he was saying it directly to Norman, but to me, I thought it was borderline too.
I thought it was a good hustle play by him. I mean, he's running down the field and Odell Beckham is trailing it, and he gets a side block on him and knocks him down to the ground. And anytime as an offensive lineman, you're down the field blocking in space and you get a guy down, you're fired up, you're pumped up. So I don't know what he said. I doubt it was anything derogatory.
And after the game, said he didn't say anything.
Yeah, to me, I think he got up and I got a great block and it's a great play and you're excited about it. And you know what? Who cares if I'm looking at a teammate? If I get up and I'm excited and it's general excitement, I mean, if it was a throat slash or if he did something derogatory, I get it. To me, that was a product of the referees. Before this game even started, they were on high alert.
Yep.
And so there was no – they were itching to throw a flag because they wanted to quell anything. And the game had just started to get chippy because that was after Josh Norman had hit Sterling Shepard. And now this drive is culminating and you're starting to see a lot more pushing and shoving after the plays. And I think that was that was a chance for the Zebras to try to really kind of nip it in the bud. Now, how crazy is it, though? All right, Odell Beckham had 3 unsportsmanlike conduct penalties last year against Josh Norman in Carolina. Was ejected from the game. This offseason, the Odell Beckham rule was in place.
And it gets his teammate.
And guess who it gets? Weston Richburg. if there was a line in Vegas as far as who's going to be the first person
to be
a victim of the Odell Beckham rule, I'm pretty sure Weston Richburg was down on the list near the bottom.
All right, Charlie, we
got
to run, pal.
One more thing.
Real fast.
I think McAdoo should change the Duke. Because whatever he's saying about the Duke, holding on to the Duke and take care of it, I think the players think they're talking about their dog, Duke. Because you should change the name to football. Maybe they'll understand better if he says the football is the one that needs to be taken care of, not the Duke.
Thank you, Charlie. Appreciate it. Turnovers have been a problem.
Yeah.
And you're not going to win many football games when you're -6 in the turnover ratio.
No, it's shocking. It was shocking going into the game that they were -4 going into the Washington game, and they were -4 in turnover differential and were 2-0. So that goes against all of Tom Coughlin's turnover ratio formulas that he used to preach to us. But
by the way, tell the fans what Tom Coughlin used to do at every Wednesday meeting with those turnover stats.
Oh, every Wednesday, and it was Saturday night. It was Saturday night. Triggs would have this unbelievable highlight video that he would show and get everybody fired up on Saturday night, and we're like, all right, yeah, we're ready to go, getting ready for the game. And then right after the video, okay, now the keys to victory, the turnover battle. All right, win the turnover battle at home, you win 82% of the time. So it was funny. Strahan used to always kind of tease and say, coach, you gotta stop giving us these numbers because we're over there on defense, and if Eli throws an interception, we're like, well, we only got a 70% chance of winning now. he used to kind of tease a little bit, and that was kind of the numbers game that we used to play. But I think the one thing that was interesting, I think it was Sunday Night Football, Michelle Tafoya. I don't know if you saw this, but
oh, with the beeping,
the beeping football. So it beeps when you've got it high and tight. And since we've got one right here, you know, I'll just show you in case you didn't see it. But it's a football that has a little sensor on it, and so when the football is down here, it doesn't make a noise. But as soon as you lift it up high and tight, just like this, all of a sudden it lets out a beep. And they're making Ezekiel Elliott carry it around. They're making the ball carriers carry it around, and they say make that ball sing. They want to hear it. They want to hear it chirp.
You know, it's funny. My
they
wife,
try it.
I was
watching the program.
I was watching the game with my wife, and she's, you know, she's not a huge football fan, but she's learning. And she made an interesting point. She goes, you know, hold on a second. That's a really annoying sound. They should have the football beeping, but when you're holding it right, it stops to motivate the players to get the annoying beeping sound to stop. And I thought that was an interesting point.
Yeah, it should play a little music. Like a little, you know, your little fight song or something. That kind of brought back memories of the program. That was a great football movie. You know, when James Caan says, if anybody brings this football back to me besides you, you're going to wish you were never born. I think it was what was the running back's name?
Oh, boy. Yeah, I don't remember the kid's name. That was the young kid running back,
Jefferson,
right?
Dwayne Jefferson, I think.
I'm trying to remember the actor. Was that?
It was Omar.
That wasn't Omar Epps, was it?
I think it was Omar.
It wasn't Omar Epps?
Yeah.
By the way, and I give Charlie credit, he did his research. After the Richburg disqualification, 15 straight pass plays.
Not one run play?
In the entire fourth quarter. The Giants' last 20 plays from scrimmage in that game were all passes.
Wow. That's interesting.
And it was a close game, too. It's not like they had to throw.
Yeah. Huh. Good job, Charlie.
Yeah, that's a good job, Charlie.
I didn't catch that. I don't think it was an indicator of Brett Jones by any means.
Okay.
I think Brett Jones, you know, mentally he can handle all that, and I think that's one of the reasons why he made this team is because mentally he can handle both the center and the guard duties. To me, it probably just speaks more of the fact that that Washington was down D'Angelo Hall, down Bashaud Breeland, and they said, you know what, we're gonna, you know, we gotta try to win the football game. And so that was probably the determining factor.
Final call of the show, Jersey Chris, is guess where? New Jersey. He's next on Big Blue Kickoff Live. What's up, Jersey Chris?
Hey, guys. How are you?
What's up, Jersey?
I'm 48 hours not listening to anything. No analysis, no dialogue, no nothing, no paper reports. This is my first Giant contact in 48 hours.
All right. So your rehab is over, and now we're here to help you out.
Yeah, you've been in isolation.
No, you guys can't help me out. No. Not the way this team plays, okay?
They're 2-1.
I'm going to give you my own analysis. No discipline on this team. Mr. McAdoo, Coach McAdoo, needs to really reel it in. And, Sean, you know what I'm talking about here, okay? Because it becomes infectious. Fumbles, interceptions. John, last week you said, Eli don't fumble. It's 4 fumbles this season, John. We need to control the ball. We need to be accountable. We need to the football, the rock, whatever you want to call it. This is infectious. If it doesn't get corrected, what happens, Sean? We lose football games.
Yeah.
Number three, the unsportsmanlike conduct, getting back to the undisciplined area. What a terrible, terrible situation to be in. Football players, especially alignment, Sean. You guys are in the pits. You guys do all the gravel work. Okay? This should not have happened. Come on. In crucial times, in crucial situations, you can live with one here or there. John, I know you're laughing. But in crucial situations.
No, it's a good call. You're enthusiastic. I love it.
Unsportsmanlike conduct in every crucial situation. Is that a coincidence? No, that's undisciplined. You know what? You want to have an identity on a football team? That's the wrong way to have an identity, okay? You want to play positive. You want to keep it really in their face. You want to do the right thing. But this banging your head on the sidelines and punching people in the face on the sidelines, come on. It's not good football.
Hey, Jersey
and
Chris,
you know what?
You know what?
Keep it on. My last point, and I'm done.
Yes, sir.
And if we keep this up, we'll be 2-5 by the break, and you all know that. If we continue to play like this, and it's the same kind of play we had last year, except for more fumbles and interceptions at crucial times, in the end zone, by the way, or on the 1-yard line, we can be 2-5. Now, with that said, I love my team, and I just hope we change it around. Ben McAdoo needs to get the team in order.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. And you know what, Jersey Chris? I'm sure Ben McAdoo used different verbiage, but that was probably not that different from the message he's going to send the team in the meeting on Thursday, that if you don't clean up the penalties, if you don't clean up the turnovers, if you don't stop making mistakes, you are going to be 2-5. You're going to lose football games.
Yeah, and that's what 48 hours of holding something in will do to you. Now you just got to unload it. And I hope you feel better, and I get it. And you know what? You should feel frustrated. I think this team has to be frustrated. I'm sure Weston Richburg, to your point, I'm sure he's embarrassed and frustrated, because the one thing you don't want to do is you don't want to be that guy.
Yeah.
And as an old lineman, if I ever got a penalty, regardless of what it was, coming back to the huddle and having to face my guys and having to face Eli and know, like, hey, man, I just cost us something. That right there, you could find me all you want. That hurts me more than anything else, knowing that I let my guys down.
The Eli look of disappointment.
Yeah, the Eli, look like, I think we also, as an O-line unit, we had our own little fine system within the O-line room. So that, I'm sure, we called the kangaroo court. I'm sure that's going on too, because Richburg, he had three penalties. Bobby Hart, I think, had a holding penalty.
Flowers had a penalty.
Flowers had at least two, I think. So certainly a lot of cleanup. Now, the interesting thing to me is this has all come to a head this week. It's been going on week one and two, but they just made plays to win. So it's that Febreze effect.
Not the penalties, though. The penalties is something new
penalties,
the third week.
Yeah,
turnovers, absolutely.
Yeah, and I think that's really where, all right, now it's reared its ugly head. And now it costs a game. So now it's got to be, all right, guys, look, we got away with some of this stuff in weeks one and two. The way that I look at this is the Giants are not a great team yet. All right. And when you win two games, it was two games down to the wire. And guess what? If Terrence Williams goes out of bounds instead of letting the clock expire, who knows? Maybe it's a different outcome. Maybe they make a field goal at the end. Maybe that Dallas game, we're talking about that game differently. The Saints game, too. Eli had to go down and basically a game-winning drive 2 weeks in a row. So,
and you had a blocked kick for a touchdown in that game, too.
Right, the blocked field goal that Janoris Jenkins scooped up. So there's a lot of what-ifs, and I think this is a great time for the Giants to look at it and say, hey, look, we're very fortunate to be 2-1. We can't continue to shoot ourselves in the foot, have turnovers, have penalties, and then just expect Eli to bail us out. And I think that's one of the things that Eli doesn't get enough credit to me. And I know he threw two interceptions. He was trying to make plays on both of those throws. But you can't always rely on, hey, Eli's going to win in the fourth quarter. It's all right. We just got to get us there. It's okay to win a game in the third quarter. It's okay to put the team away. And to me, the biggest penalty of the game was the personal foul on the punt blocked. Because when you block that kick, the momentum swung. It was huge. The Giants were going to get the ball right there. They were going to come away with points of some sort. And the momentum clearly shifted. And then with the penalty, and it became offsetting, now it was a do-over, that play really changed the complexity and the feel of the game. But I think this team, this is a good wake-up call. And it's early in the season, and it's a chance for them to figure out we can't keep playing sloppy football and expect to win. Certainly not against Minnesota. They don't beat themselves. The Vikings are not going to beat themselves. And the Green Bay Packers, because if you turn the ball over two times against Aaron Rodgers, you're looking up at 14-0.
Yeah, and to me, that Adams penalty was the worst one, because that wasn't even in the flow of the game. That was an unnecessary play where they're out of the play, they're off to the side. It was kind of just a cheap shot. All right, real quick, 10 to 15-second answers here, rapid-fire Twitter. You ready?
Okay.
Here we go. I want to try to get to some of these. The almost Norman pick in the red zone, Eli trying to find Beckham in that little skinny post.
Yeah.
Whose fault?
It's a bad throw.
In terms of location or where he decided to throw it?
Location. I think it was okay with the throw. Eli saw the safety. He was trying to throw the ball away from the safety, and he threw it behind Odell. Had he led Odell just a little bit more, it would have been a touchdown. So the throw was behind him.
Shea Stewart, I think fans are upset because our three wide receivers are roasting defenses and we choose to run versus pass and throw to the tight ends and running backs. Can you just throw to the wide receivers?
I think you can't just throw to the wide receivers all the time, especially, as I mentioned before on the show, Washington was in their dime defense. They had six guys in the box. They were daring the Giants to run the football. The Dallas Cowboys did the same thing, and that's why the Giants ran the ball seven times in a row at the end of the Dallas Cowboys game. So you have to run the ball in certain situations. But I will agree with this. Need more production out of the tight end.
And they've had Will Tye and Larry Donnell on that play. Will Tye, you'd like to maybe go after the ball a little bit harder on that pick in the end zone,
yeah,
right?
It looked like he kind of stopped his route. For Larry Donnell, to me, he's got to show up more. Too many times does he gets tackled right after the catch. There's not a lot of yards after contact with him. And it just sometimes it seems like he's battling his hands.
Pass rush. I know they have some numbers. They have some sacks. They have some quarterback hits and some pressures. Do you think they're affecting other quarterbacks enough on a consistent basis?
No, I don't think they are. And I think a lot of it is a product of the offensive lines they played. And I mentioned that Washington Redskins are one of the best pass blocking O-lines, according to Pro Football Focus right now. The Dallas Cowboys in week one, that was a big matchup. I think these next couple weeks, they've got to really step it up. Olivia Vernon, I mentioned he's battling a wrist injury, and JPP's battling a shoulder injury. They need a third guy. Somebody else has got to show up. Jonathan Hankins, to me, has been playing really well. He's been so close.
He's been great.
He's shedding the O-lineman, and he's right there. He's one step away from a big sack. So I think he could end up being a big presence. And then I think Owa Adigizua, they bring him in a lot in some of these nickel packages, and I think he's a guy that they really got to kind of get involved as well.
And that question was from James Tipper, by the way. I think that's all the Twitter questions I have for rapid fire time here. So we thank Sean O'Hara for joining us today. Sean, this was a lot of fun. It was a pleasure.
This was great.
I hope the fans had fun as well, and we'll have Sean kind of sprinkled in over the course of the year on these Tuesdays. And, of course,
sprinkles.
We will let you know. Well, you have to have the ice cream to have the sprinkles, though, right?
Yeah, definitely. Well, I mean, that's what you think.
You're more of a soft serve, or do you like more the Haagen-Dazs?
Oh, I love soft serve. Oh,
yeah. Dairy Queen or Carvel?
Both.
Okay.
Why would you make anybody choose? And I'm not scared of Rita's either.
Well, growing up in New York City, I didn't have Dairy Queen. All I had was Carvel growing up, so that was my jam.
Okay, yeah, Carvel works. That's fine. Rita's, though, that custard. Not the Italian.
I've never had Rita's.
You've never had Rita's?
No.
They've got a custard that they –
Oh, Rita's.
Rita's. No,
no I've not had Rita's.
It's Rita's Italian ice, but they have Italian ice and they have custard. The custard is out of this world.
I think I've had the packaged Italian ices. I have not had the custard before.
Yeah, there's one in Fairlawn. You got to go check it out.
I will.
Right off of Maple Ave.
He's Sean O'Hara. I am John Schmelk. Go get your ice cream. Thanks for joining us at Giants.com, everybody. We'll see you next time on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Have a great one.